The way I must enter leads through darkness to darkness. Tonight I want to read a few passages from the next book that I read this summer. This one's called Opening to Darkness by Zenju Erthlin Manuel. Perhaps some of you have heard of it or read it. And it's an exploration of darkness. And when we hear that word, you might begin by just seeing what comes to mind. And for many people, what initially comes to mind is a kind of negativity. You know, we try to be lighthearted. We don't want to have a dark personality. We talk about dark moods. In Zenju, in her telling, there's also negative associations that are projected upon Black people, and so derivative racist outlooks can be born out of a kind of associative quality in terms of our relationship with darkness itself. And so it, for her, very personally has enormous importance, this kind of looking into darkness, our associations that we have with it, and to come to some kind of peace with it. So I'm going to share with you some passages from the book and then share with you some stories from my life and some reflections and really just try to open up this topic. Before I begin, of course, the darkness is something that has a certain kind of Zen history as well. We talk about the light and the dark, streams branching in the darkness. We talk about, for example, in koans, you know, the story of the learned one who goes to the Zen teacher and they talk about the teachings all night. And the learned one is still lost in his thoughts. And he looks outside after this entire discussion, probably feeling somewhat disheartened. And he says back to the teacher, "It's dark outside." And the teacher says, "Oh, so it is." And he offers him a candle. And as he's about to step out into the darkness with the candle, the teacher blows it out. And at that moment, the student has a great awakening. Interestingly, he'd thought that he'd been seeking the light all along. But the darkness is what opened his heart. So this willingness to turn toward the dark is a part of our practice, this encouragement to explore the unknown. We might think of the darkness as the unknown. Often when we think of death, we think of darkness. In our most horrid images, we might picture being nailed into a coffin while we're somehow still sentient, and the earth pouring down on top of us, 6 feet under the ground in the dark. We have these terrifying images, some of them born out of childhood fears, and these associations with the dark and horror. We think of hell, we might think of it as a dark place, shadowy beings. So here's what I'll share with you, some passages, and then enter back into this topic. The transformative process begins with your own truth of suffering. This is the first noble truth. You may have read many books and talked to many teachers, and yet still you struggle with this life, which is to struggle with darkness. If we can't end inevitable suffering, we certainly can end the struggling with it. Few books or teachers have advised us to stay in this darkness when it arises. The Eightfold Path is often thought of as a path to end suffering and darkness, but I see it as an ancient path to be with suffering and darkness. Darkness is an open awareness, despite our fear of it. Our efforts to sustain light by turning away from darkness lead to a life with attention paid only to light. With such attention, we experience great disappointment and hopelessness if light doesn't appear when we want it. Those with attention only to light are exhausted by the work of sustaining an eternal glow in and around them. They conjure artificial light by pretending all is good in their life. We sometimes call this spiritual bypass. One demon that often comes up for people that it's a hard one to be with is the demon of anger, and it can even be a righteous kind of anger. So Zenju encourages us to sit with these demons that are difficult. Continue sitting with the demon. Meditate together. Sitting together will help prevent you from going off the edge. Destruction may be at hand, not necessarily destruction for the sake of humanity's ascension, but a destruction that brings senseless harm. What if we try just sitting with it instead of acting on it in those moments? The darkness of awareness, our practice. And she talks about the darkness of death, as I alluded to. She writes, "In my experience, it is always a shock when someone I know dies, whether it's sudden or expected. It's always a shock to find ourselves in dark times. What is the shock? That the person is no longer. That they have vanished into the infinite darkness that we have allowed to haunt us. When we are invited to open to darkness, doesn't death eventually come to mind?" The late Buddhist teacher Thich Nhat Hanh said that there is no need to talk about death because there is no death. He asked his Sangha to write, "I'm not here," on his shrine. In case the first message wasn't understood, he also instructed them to write, "I'm not out there either." This is the truth of the boundless nature of life, death, and yes, darkness. What if we were to consider dark times as an organic process of surrendering all we think we need to survive? Status, fame, money, a house beyond our needs, new clothes every year, nice cars. How about our very bodies? Maybe in dark times we are being invited to consider what we are and what we are not. We have been taught that death is the worst thing that can come upon us. We have been taught to view darkness this way. Perhaps we can be messengers for what the dark is birthing in death. Whether you believe death is final or a transition into the afterlife, it doesn't matter. Death happens anyway. Death is here as the greatest gateway into eternal blackness. And finally, she writes, "Connect to the wisdom of darkness through contemplating it and then surrendering to it without effort. Darkness has come on its own, seeking you. The call is to reconcile with darkness, to ease your fear. This call is meant to reduce the feeling of being haunted by dark experiences, by what you haven't been able to welcome into your life. So there's my brief synopsis of the book, a series of quotes to invite you into it, something you might want to explore. When I was a child, I remember lying in the dark when I was very young, and I grew up in a family that went to a church that had, little did I know, a kind of mystical element to it. We talked about God being both outside us and within us. Really, there was one fabric, and we were all it. And so when I would lie in bed at night as this young child, sometimes I would pray to God. And I felt that God's presence was in my mind where I was thinking, because he could hear every thought, but also external. So a kind of awareness running right through me and beyond me. And somehow in the darkness, the lines that separated me were invisible. The outline of my skin seemed to vanish, and my awareness would just sort of open wide. And I remember telling my brother about it one night. "Do you feel like your head is as big as the room?" And he basically said, "What the hell are you talking about?" So I kept that one to myself from then on. But I would lie at night in bed and feel this expansive awareness running through me, a kind of awareness that was not personal, that was transpersonal. And I had no better name for it than God, but I was part of that. And that's what the darkness meant to me. In some senses, I think of that as the seed of practice for me. As I got older and became an adolescent, and after some periods of time of being left alone in darkness and looking out dark windows and being afraid for my life when I was very young, the darkness came to be threatening to me, and it came to signify something more like aloneness and death. It came to be the opposite. It came to be separation, much like the way of we think of hell. I won't go into the personal side of all this, but just to share that my experience with darkness shifted quite dramatically as I grew older, and it became something oppressive and threatening and isolating, much like the coffin under the earth. Sometime more than 20 years ago, I had been doing some kind of meditative practices, but not formal meditation. And at some point I decided, having studied the philosophy of Buddhism and Zen many, many years, and having practiced yoga and other concentrative things, that it was time for me to just sit still. I was inspired by Shunryu Suzuki's book. And one of his readings is Believe in Nothing. It's a very interesting reading. This is a nothing that takes the shape of everything. We might think of darkness that way. We might think of this as emptiness. And of course, that's what Shunryu Suzuki was doing. He was using new metaphors, or old metaphors, kind of like yin and yang, the dark and the light in the circle, that are becoming each other all the time. So I decided to sit one evening, and I realized that I still had this weird fear of the dark from when I was a child. You know that feeling like you would turn off the light in the basement and still have to go up the stairs? You'd be in the dark. And so you might hurry up the stairs quickly. You realize as you're getting to the top of the stairs that something is actually about to get your ankles. Out of the imagination, monsters are born. I realized I'd been living with that kind of weird anxiety, inexplicable to me, obviously a childhood fear, for a long time. So I decided to just sit in the pitch black darkness one night. I couldn't see a thing. I reached out my hand in front of me. I couldn't see my own hand. And I felt this enormous energy building in me. Of course, it was my fear. As I was looking into the dark to see what had frightened me all these years. And out of my imagination, or out of some spirit realm, a three-headed dog charged at me until it was about to bite my face and it vanished. And from that moment on, I was fine in the dark. Sometimes we have to sit right in our fear and just bear witness. The vanishing is fascinating, isn't it? Like a little sound in the zendo, click, and then it's gone. Where did it go? It seems to disappear into nothing. But there is no nothing other than everything. Still, I think we have this great fear that nothing is something. And it's something that we want to sit with. We want to look into these types of fears. Just now, I had to use the restroom. And I decided to use the one downstairs. And there were no lights on down there. So I went into the restroom and I turned on the light, obviously. And then I shut it off and I stepped out and I looked to the right and there was just a doorway into a black space. And knowing that I was giving this talk, I stepped into it and just looked into the pitch black darkness. No dog heads emerged. But I wondered if there was some sort of movement in the dark. Sometimes we sit in stillness, we sit in perfect stillness in the zendo. But if we're really, really still, we notice that in the stillness there is the movement of the entire universe. You may have also had the experience of, I don't know, perhaps playing music or jogging or doing some sort of sport. And as you're playing the music and moving, it's as if you're in a single moment and what's passing through is the music. Somehow in the movement you've found stillness. I think darkness is actually this way. It's always with us. Sometimes it takes on these connotations for us of death and loss and grief. And the encouragement is that when these things arise, we stay with them. We let them be here. We don't have to force them to continue. When they go away, they go away. Like everything, everything goes its own way. So there's really nothing to fear. But we have to see that for ourselves. We have to allow grief to arise and be with us and flourish and unfold fully and completely. And only when we allow it to do so are we no longer afraid of it. Do we no longer need to run away from it? Everything is impermanent. Of course our hearts break for the people we love and lose in our lives, even for the anticipation of such losses. These are our five remembrances. We may even anticipate our own death. And here, we come to a great place of darkness because we don't know what happens when we die. We can tell stories, we can imagine, but we enter into a real kind of not knowing when we're honest about it. And that not knowing is so frightening for us. What's it like just to be with the not knowing, to be with the darkness? Because if we don't make peace with these kinds of fears, with our griefs, with our losses, if we're always running toward the light, we can't be at peace with the way that things actually are. Denial doesn't work either. It's a plasticky mask that we put on. Now, this isn't to say that we should always be wrought with sadness. There is joy, love, connection, the sweetness of life. What I'm saying is that I think that many of the things that we think of as bad, even death, when we really allow it to be present with us, to sit with it, that the actual experience that we have of it in the moment is not what we thought it would be. That we don't need to run. That what we find in these dark places is often beautiful, is often love, appreciation, care. And I want to come to the final notion here around the primordial darkness. The unity of emptiness and form. Emptiness is exactly form. Form is exactly emptiness. Each moment, this entire universe vanishes and arises. It's an amazing thing. Just blinking out of existence and back into existence. This life is like a dream. We can hold on to nothing. This evening, perhaps you're thinking, wow, this is a really long talk. It's going to be over before you know it. And then you're going to be thinking, oh, I remember that talk. My words are vanishing. It's really something, this life. Like water in our hands, slipping through our fingers, we try to grip it and hold on to it, and we just can't. The dark is right here in the light, folks. Life and death, hyphenated. It's what we are. If you try to avoid one, you avoid the other. So my deep poetic encouragement, embrace the whole enchilada. Thank you.